The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Welcome to the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. I'm Nathan, and I'm joined, as always, by Marcus. How you doing, Marcus?
I'm doing well, Nathan. How are you?
I'm not too bad, man. I've actually had a really stressful, horrible day. And I know your day is just beginning, but mine's sort of getting towards the end now. I have spent nearly all day today trying to fix an administrative error on the side of Spain. The Spanish administration system for anything business related is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. And you probably say it's the same in the States, or I don't know, but wow. Just to be able to receive business notifications for Noosey, the company, you know, you have to have certain security certificates installed on your browser and things like this, so you can, you know, verify who you are. And in Spain, you can only use Internet Explorer or Firefox.
I'm sorry.
And it has to be an old version of Firefox. You can't have a new version, because if you have a new version, it won't work. And if you have an older version that's above, I think it's version 53, they're now on like 58, then you have to add an extension to it so that you can sign. Oh, it's just been an absolute nightmare. It's been an absolute nightmare. Don't start a business in Spain.
Oh, I am so sorry to hear that. You know, it is tax time in the US. And so if you own a business, you're probably scrambling around, not with your browser, but at least if you're me, you're trying to figure out, what did I spend money on and which of those items can I write off and how screwed am I with my taxes? All that stuff.
How easy is all that in the States? Can you basically just, you know, do it yourself and send it all off? Do people tend to work with accountants over there? How does it go?
I mean, I think everybody I know works with accountants. I work with an accountant, and my wife has a business. I have a business. And both of us have, like, there's all the bookkeeping and filing and regular payroll filing and tax payments that come monthly and quarterly. And if you haven't kept up on that, if you miss by a day, then there's penalties. That's the biggest reason I have an accountant, is to keep me out of jail with all the penalties and then keep me from being broke. But yeah,
that's a good reason.
It's really complicated. And they change the rules. I don't know what you were trying to access with the browser, but over here, at least for me, like, I just tell, I fear that's what I pay my accountant for, is to have the right browser installed to work with the government.
No, to be fair, it was actually my accountant that was helping me through this, because as I'm the administrator of Noosey, you know, I get the official notifications that come through about the business. Then I hand them on to the accountant if they're
right,
sort of, if they're a money related kind of thing. But I couldn't even access them anymore, because I'd had my computer disk wiped a few weeks ago because I had a problem, and it wiped all the certificates. And you actually have to go to a building and with your ID and get them to send you a key. Then you have to, oh, horrible.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I hope our listeners are having a better week than we are.
Well, yeah, it's only today, to be fair. So, and we're going away tomorrow. So it's my daughter's got her second gymnastics competition
down on
the coast. So yeah, so we'll be going away for that tomorrow. So that'll be cool. But what about the rest of your week? How has that been?
You know, the rest, I've been really just, frankly, I'm working on this new service offering, doing some leadership workshops around the Western United States. And even though, like I was thinking the other day, I've had this business for 10 years or a business, there's really been almost four distinct businesses within it, even though it might be the same legal entity. And every time I try a new offering to a new audience in a new way with a new marketing channel, it feels like starting all over again. And everybody in the world has a ton of advice about how you ought to do it. And I'm almost to the point where the worst thing I can do is just, the worst thing you can do is try and follow everyone else's advice, because I just think it's just madness. So it's a little frustrating right now.
So what training courses are you working on at the moment?
We're working on some, my wife and I do these technical leadership training courses together, which is a big fancy name, but basically it's like a 2 to 3 day workshop where we put people in a room and we give them engineering problems, simulations involving Legos, Lego bricks and Tinker Toys and all kinds of kids stuff. And we ask them to build things. And then we ask them to learn to observe their teamwork, their leadership, their problem solving, lots of other stuff. So yeah, people really like it. But I'm sure you've had this, Nathan. You can have the greatest service in the world. But if nobody knows about it and people don't understand the benefits, then you're dead. So we're in that phase now of trying to kind of figure a lot of that out.
Yeah, whoever said build it and they will come, I don't think ever had a very successful business.
That's right.
It's a complete crock, yeah. So
it is, yes.
Well, we on our side of things, we've been waiting for the last couple of months to talk about this. And actually, A couple of weeks before Christmas, we'd heard about this product that was on sale, a product called Tiny Reminder. And Michael and I were umming and ahhing, thinking whether it would be a good fit for Nusi, for us, for our customers, for the way we want to move forward. You know, what would it be useful for, etc. Things ended up working out. We ended up taking on this second product. So Nusi has a little sister. And this is tinyreminder.com. And it's basically we relaunched the website, shall I say, in complete disclosure. We just redesigned the website and launched the app is still as it was. But it's essentially an automated virtual assistant for freelancers. So it allows you to go in, create a sort of certain flow, maybe an onboarding and questionnaires, content you need off a client maybe before a project can actually begin. And it will actually just send out these emails reminding your client to send in this web content or to make this initial payment or to complete this checklist. And it will basically sort of take the sort of stress of you having to do that, and it will keep sending them reminders until they actually complete this task for you. So so we actually launched that a couple of weeks ago and completely forgot to even mention it on the podcast. So tinyreminder.com, it's there. Coming year, we'll start changing it and improving it. And so if you want to jump in, it's free to use, completely free, no credit card needed or anything. So if you want to jump in and take a look, and feel free to send us some feedback. So there, that's the plug done.
Nice. Well, you know, so, maybe one day we should have a show that talks about why offering something really valuable for free is a reasonable business approach. But that's not today's show, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, people will say, you know, you already have a paid product. Why the heck would you buy and give away another product for free? Yeah, definitely. We can talk about that. All right. So what are we going to talk about today then, Marcus?
We're going to talk about the joy and struggle and pain and yet necessity of selling your ideas to clients, of sort of moving beyond just being told what to do on one hand, like, oh, you're almost an employee, because I hear a lot of freelancers say they treat me like an employee, but to kind of level up our conversations and to make them better, not just so that we get what we want, but so that we make sure our clients get what they need. Mm-hmm. How's that sound?
That's awesome. That's such an important distinction, I think, getting what they want and getting what they need. You know, often cases, you know, those two things never meet in the middle, do they?
So they never do.
And then clients get upset, you know, when their web page isn't converting or they're not getting those trial signups or, you know, whatever the case might be. And who gets the blame? Well, you do, the contractor or the agency or, yeah.
Now, you have a really good book on this, right?
Yeah, we obviously working with proposal software and getting to that proposal point has to come after, you know, a series of, you know, we would call them client interviews, where you would essentially, you know, find out exactly what the client, as you said, you know, wanted and then actually what they needed. But getting from one point to the other requires, I think, a certain amount of experience at some, you know, at some level, and also, you know, just a basic, should we say, a script or a set of questions that we can help distill information from, you know, this is what I think the problem is, to actually, you know, this is the problem, you know, and this is the outcome we're looking for. And these are so many things. Yeah. So we essentially put together a brief guide on Nusi, and it's called How to Survive Client Interviews. So you can rock your proposals. Yay.
Yay.
And you can find that on the Nusi site. If you scroll to the bottom, you can see a link to a few of our books. Yeah, no, that's completely free. So yeah, essentially we're going to talk about some of those ideas mentioned in the book, and see how we can make it easier, right? To go from, you know, I want a website to, I think this is what you need, and actually making the sale at the end of it.
Well, let's dive in. Let's use that example. Cause I think that question it's not a question, the statement, I want a new website. I have had business owners call me up and say, I want a new website. And when they do that, at least in my experience, there is almost always an immediate second question that comes along with that. Can you guess what that is?
Well, I think if I've learned anything over the last few years, it would always be to answer any question with why.
Well, that's the right answer. But oftentimes my clients seem to say, I want a new website. How much is it? They're like, they make this statement, I want a new website. And then they immediately say, how much is it? And I don't know if you're listening and that's ever happened to you. It's happens to me on a regular basis. People call you and it's almost like they're buying a piece of steak or a carrot, right? They're like, I want this carrot. How much is it? And we're just used to working that way. But I think you gave away kind of the first thing there, Nathan. So let's dive into
I was answering. My question came directly from the other side, not from the client side.
So if now, because you are an experienced client interviewer and you are focused on making sure you provide the clients the value they actually need, what was it that you respond? How do you respond if someone says, hey, Nathan, I need a new website?
In a not so direct way, I would ask them, the first thing I would ask them is why do they think they need this new service, or in this case, a new website? You know, because I think so many times we want a new version of an existing product, service, website, application, whatever, for any number of reasons. I mean, it could just be because a competitor has just updated their website, perhaps, and you feel the need to update yours. Without any sort of data behind that, without any reasoning, maybe sales are even good. Maybe signups are great, but you know, Bob next door has just updated his website, so you need to update yours as well. And I think a lot of the times, you know, when we tend to work as freelance technicians, should we say, as opposed to consultants, maybe can we split them that way? Perhaps, you know, ones that do as they are told, and others that think for themselves. Okay. That sounds horrible. It sounds horrible when you put it like that, but. Those that are able to sell their ideas rather than, you know, sort of just doing literally what they're told. Once you can actually just get behind the reasoning for anything, you know, whether that's, you know, the client coming to you for the new website or any decision or thoughts they might have, getting to the behind the scenes on that will help dictate the entire process. It would even help you to look at whether you even want to take the project on, and so many other areas. So yeah, the first thing I would ask would be, you know, why do we need this? And they won't always immediately know the answer either. The great thing about some of these questions is that it makes your client think about areas that perhaps they hadn't even thought of previously, you know? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm imagining this why question doesn't get asked in the context of a carrot. Why do you want this carrot? Like, you don't have to explain to your grocer why you need a carrot. Well, I'm cooking a stew, right? Or I enjoy carrots, or I want to help my eyes, or whatever it is. And in fact, I think it almost has. So by the way, I completely agree that we have to start with the why question. It used to make me really nervous, because it almost seemed like I was asking the client to justify to me, why should I work with you? Like, what reason do you have for wanting this new website?
I can understand that, but let me sort of throw that back at you. Have you ever turned down a client project for any reason? You know, if you didn't see sort of the need for it to move forward, you know, regardless of what that reason was. And I think this is the beginning of the process, because I think another thing as well that separates the technician from the consultant, for want of a better description, I'm going to have to think about that for something for the future, I think is when we actually get to decide whether we want to work on a project as well, as opposed to just, I'll take anything that comes my way.
Yeah, no, that's a really good distinction.
And I think it's another reason to ask these questions, because if the things you're hearing aren't to your liking, then again, it helps you to make the decision, you know. So yeah, so why do you need this website in this case? And I think a lot of times they don't actually have a solid answer, and that's okay. But I think it gives them a good place to start thinking about why.
Yeah, I've heard the why, just like you said, you know, because my competitor updated theirs. I've also heard the why of, because I hate my web person. Like, they just never return my calls. They're really flaky. Or because it's just pointless. Like, you know, or this is my favorite. Like, because it's ugly. It doesn't feel like me. Like, our place is, our restaurant or our thing is beautiful, our business, and our website is ugly. And I always get people who say, oh, you should update your website. So yeah, a lot of times they feel like it's a reflection of them. It's almost very personal, mm-hmm. why they want a website update. I don't think I've ever had someone come to me and say, because it's only converting at 3.1% and I think I can do better. You're laughing. You haven't had that either.
I haven't had that exact same reason, but believe me, I get that data before I begin to work on a project, but that's for later on in the conversation.
So then if somebody says why and they give you a reason that that doesn't have any connection maybe to their business or a loose one, like mm-hmm. someone else updated theirs or because it's just ugly or whatever. Do we just say, I think this is where the technician just nods his head and says, okay, great. And thinks, well, I'll look at that. I'll make something that's prettier. And in fact, I remember when I used to be a technician, and I call it like early in our agency days, we were just about doing the work, not about thinking about the work. We would say, oh, any website we build is going to be super beautiful. You're going to really mm-hmm. love it. Oh, that's great. Cause I need something that's really beautiful. Okay. Then when we talk about why do you need this? If they give you a reason, but it doesn't seem like it's got a lot of strength behind it, do we follow up with what other question do we ask?
Well, I think, yeah, we don't necessarily have to say, oh, well, you haven't thought about this enough. Come back and see me when you've done your homework kind of thing. You know, we can, these are things that we can, you know, just pile up and take into account at the end of a process. And I mean, it doesn't even necessarily need to just be, you know, we're going to have one conversation. If I don't feel you're a good fit, I mean, and oftentimes you can tell in one conversation, but you know, this could be sort of spread out over a couple of conversations. But I think, yeah, you don't necessarily just have to say, you don't have a very good reason, right? I'm not going to work with you. I think you can still continue to talk. I think in a very conversational tone as well, you know, in a very sort of, call them client interviews, but that's more, I think, to help us feel a little more comfortable. I certainly, client interviews and sort of conversations and something was something that petrified me in the early days, and I used to hate it. So this idea of sort of making a client interview sort of put me in the driving seat, so to speak. You know, I'm not being interviewed for a job as if I was a technician. You know, I'm interviewing them to see whether they can work with me kind of thing. It was a sort of a transfer of power thing.
I like that.
It worked to help me get through the nerves anyway. But yeah,
it is nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And especially, you know, if you're not someone who's comfortable sitting in front of people and going, you know, conducting any kind of interview, it can be nerve-wracking. Yeah. But so I mean, if they don't come back with something that you think is earth-shattering, then I think, you know, there are a ton of other questions we can go through. I mean, we're not going to have time to go through even half of them today. But I mean, from there, I would say, okay, well, you don't necessarily have an earth-shattering reason for wanting this redesign. So then maybe rephrasing it, you know, another way and sort of asking them, well, do you think this is actually going to solve any kind of problem? Because I think it's the same question, just rephrased and going a bit deeper. Mm-hmm. Because they might say, well, you know, if they were to come back from that and say, well, actually, we don't really have any problems. If you don't have any problems, and if it's just a redesign, then, you know, we'll have a different conversation. But I think nearly all these questions are all to get the client thinking, because oftentimes, as we said, there's no, and obviously this isn't true for all clients, but there isn't always an awful lot of thought that comes behind the I need. So all of these questions are basically just there to help them think. So, you know, what problem is us working together going to help you solve, I think is the second question I would ask. And it's almost like a rephrasing of the first. I mean, did you ever use that when you used to talk to clients or did?
Yeah, no, we would, you know, we'd sit down oftentimes, hopefully, you know, it was a conversation and I did bring a set of questions. So I felt just like you that I was the interviewer. And so, you know, tell me about what you're looking for, listen to them talk. Why do you want this? What are your goals? they would usually make something up. It was sometimes apparent that they hadn't thought about it, right? A lot of times it would just be to get more sales, right? That's the whole point. This is a marketing website. So why are you even asking? Of course it's to get, you know, to get more business. Well, that wasn't really the goal, but that's fine. I would also sometimes ask, well, why do it now? I mean, it's a big expense building a website. Yeah. Why is now the right time? And I'd like to drop that phrase in there. It's a big expense, to be honest, because I haven't told them a price, but I don't want them to think that this is like a nickel and dime store. What do they call it? Like
they haven't stepped into Costco for their website.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to give them the sense that this is going to be an investment. And so why is now the right time to make that investment? What if you put it off a year? And that's when you start to see, well, I could. And a lot of you listening might be saying, Marcus, you're crazy, because if you do that, you're basically, it sounds like you're trying to talk them out of doing the project. Yeah. And there is an element of truth to this, to be frank, because I have found so many well-intentioned clients even sign a contract and put down a deposit, and then they appear to disappear off the face of the earth. I can't get content. They don't return my phone calls. I'm left trying to figure out what they wanted in some new website, and I can't even get them to give me any content at all, which means I'm completely guessing, which means it wasn't urgent to them. To them, they solved a problem, I hate to say it, by feeling like they were moving the initiative forward by writing a check. Like they were like, oh, I've got that. At least that one's done. I gave Marcus some money. I'll talk to him in 6 months. Here, I thought in 6 days we were going to be meeting again. And it's six more months until I talk to him. So I do want to find out. I want to work with clients. It kind of goes back to that. Is this a good fit for both of us? I want to work with clients who have an urgency about getting the project done. And I think that comes from really wanting to capture the value of the project.
Yeah. And I've done that a lot as well. It probably appears to an outsider that I'm shooting myself in the foot by pushing back on so many things. And in actual fact, before I sort of finished consulting, the last few clients I actually did, you know, I said, I think you'd be better off just sort of improving the current website you have, or in the case of a new product or service, which came to me more recently towards the end, was I said, look, just get up an initial page, get some feedback, you know, on what's happening with the conversions and everything, and then look to invest. Because if you invest from the very beginning in something as big and as expensive as this, without any data behind it or anything, it's all going to be hearsay and I think and you think and this might do that or the other. So I actually pushed them away and said, look, don't spend any money now. Just get something up, get some data coming in, get some signups coming and see where you're failing, the areas of failing, then come back and talk to me again. And I did that with the last few projects, in fact. And, you know, and a lot of people probably say, well, you're completely insane. But the thing it does is it already builds trust and it already helps to place you in the situation of, this is a person, a consultant that can be trusted. And this is someone that I feel I could come back to when the moment is right as well.
Yeah, I think that is a huge confidence indicator, a huge trust indicator. You're essentially putting your, what appears to be apparent financial needs, second to the client's outcomes needs, right? Mm-hmm. You're saying, and sometimes I'll use this phrase, if this were my website, I wouldn't, you know, do what we're talking about. I would go this other direction if it were my money. And that's not telling the other person what to do. But most people, when they're talking to a professional, they sort of imagine that if that professional, who must be really savvy, you know, in their trade, were to do a similar thing, that they would do it really well. And so if I just say, well, if this were my money, I think I'd do X and Y and Z. Oh, well, really? Like, that's what you wouldn't just go for a big redesign? Now I'd want to, just like you said, make an incremental improvement, capture data, put in tools to measure. I'd want to do more thinking than I would just, you know, big changes. And
yeah, exactly. No, I was just going to say, because obviously you as the consummate consultant, you want the absolute best results for your client because, well, for obvious reasons, they're going to be happy. You know, they're going to refer people to you. They're probably going to come back for more work in the future. I mean, there are you wanting the absolute best outcome for your client is the best position to always be playing from. And if that means saying no right now, or just pushing back on something right now and therefore making a suggestion for another area to work on, then that's always going to come back to, to, I think, tenfold.
Yeah. One of the other favorite questions I have, to be honest, is one where I say, well, why me? Why am I the right person? I'm not going to be the cheapest. Why are we even having this conversation? Like, why don't you use someone else? Mm-hmm. And just stop. Like, don't sell it and say, you know, sometimes at first I used to ask that question and I would almost impulsively answer it by telling them how great I was, right? But what I learned was if I could get them to tell me why they wanted to work with me and I could just shut my mouth for 5 minutes, I would learn a whole lot. And plus, this weird thing happened where they're almost pitching you on working with them, right? Because, mm-hmm. and frankly, I'd want to work with people who are excited to work with me. That is an important part of the dynamic.
It's always easier to find money to pay someone when you're excited to work with them.
Yeah. I like, yeah, that sounds like a t-shirt.
Believe me, it is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if somebody says, well, I don't know why I work with you. I found your name in the phone book, you know? And a lot of times I'll tell people, well, if I just happen to be the first one you ran across, let me give you the name of three other people and you can do your due diligence. Sometimes they say, no, look, I don't have time and you're right here. And, you know, but other times they have asked around or gotten a referral and they have a reason. And if they have a reason, I want to know about it, frankly.
So another thing I always like to ask is, and I think this gets more, it gets a bit more specific, is actually how the success of the project is going to be measured. Because again, a lot of the times a client might not necessarily have thought of this. If you are just designing, we're always referring to the design because I'm a designer. So if you are just merely redesigning a website, I'd say merely in air quotes, but you know, and it just needs to look good. Well, you know, that's completely open to interpretation.
Right.
But you need to actually be able to measure whether a project has been successful or not, not just whether the CEO's wife liked it. You know, has it helped to push the business forward in the way that they'd expected? And therefore, what was that way in which your business was going to be pushed forward? You know, tell me exactly how this project is going to be a success. And again, it's a very similar question to the one that you were asking, why work with me? And then just leave it, just be quiet. Because mm-hmm. you can give them so many ideas about the way to measure success, but actually just ask the question and then just stum. Let them tell you what a successful project looks like to them. What would be the ideal result? So you know what you're playing with. You know exactly, you know, okay, so this is what needs to happen for this project to be a success for this client and everything that entails and means thereafter.
And so if you ask this question and someone says, well, I don't know, I make more sales, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's where you need to dig down though. So we come back to the eternal why. Well, you know, we need to make more sales. We'll say, well, can you be a bit more specific? You know, we all want to make more money, you know? I want to make more money. You know, I could just charge you double for this consultation and I'd automatically be making more money. But, you know, that doesn't help anyone. And it wouldn't help you understand why I was charging you double. So let's dig down on that. Well, I want to make more sales. Okay, so how are you currently making sales? Well, we're currently making sales through a trial sign up, which is 14 days. And then after that, clients can either opt out or opt in. But on running parallel to that, we actually have, you know, a free course on, you know, how to build your own home, which is a 5-part course. And we have a 55%, you know, sort of conversion rate on that, et cetera. There are always going to be so many ways that those sales make place, right? So if you just say, well, I need to make more sales, well, then this is when the time comes to start digging down a little deeper and say, all right, well, how are you making your sales right now? You know, what sort of percentage? Can you give me an idea? You know, what have you done in the past to improve these methods? You know, have they worked? Have they failed? Have you seen an increase? And whatever they come back with you, whatever the answer is that comes back, you know, just always try and push a little bit deeper. You know, I mean, at the base of, you know, at the very root of it, we all love talking about ourselves and our businesses. So it's not actually that hard to get that information. It's just that I don't think oftentimes we think about these things until somebody asks us for that information or for those thoughts or that process behind X.
Yeah. And one thing I've seen sometimes, I love it. Everything you're saying is really important. And if we can engage in that conversation where we start to say, not just we want to increase sales, but we can say, to who will we increase sales? And what segment do you feel you're not selling enough to? And where are people falling out of the funnel? And hey, do you know your numbers? Be prepared that not everybody will know their numbers. And I think it's very important that we not make the client feel any shame or humiliation that they don't know their numbers. Because if you ask a question and they look at you, you can make a friend into an enemy very quickly by making them feel stupid. And they That's have a great had point, a lot yeah. of other people in a lot of technicians make them feel stupid. So I'm really sensitive about that. Sometimes I'll simply make a note and I will say to them, well, let's make figuring that out part of the project. And when I do that, I say let's, because it's a together activity. It's part of the project, so it's paid. Oftentimes they'll go from a look of like, well, I don't want to look dumb. I really should know this. And they're, in fact, a lot of times they say, oh, I'm so bad at marketing. I really should know this. Okay, let's just let them off the hook and say, all right, it's okay. Like, let's just make finding those things out a part of this project. Oh, yeah. Like, there's this relief.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
And then I think we're moving to this really important, so far we've talked about a lot of questions, which help us as the technician and consultant, but also I think help the client, like you said, think through the project. But when do we talk about what their budget is? Because that is important to me, because I have budgetary minimums. I don't work on certain projects that have a budget below a certain amount. And so this conversation is such that I want to find out if the client is qualified from a budgetary perspective to work with me. How can I do that?
Sure. And I think there are a few ways of doing this as well. I mean, I should probably mention that I wouldn't jump on a call with a client without doing some kind of vetting prior. So I'm not just going to jump on a call because somebody has shot me an email or grabbed my link on Calendly or something. That's never going to happen, because I need to know that there's at least, you know, a chance that they can afford to work with me, want to work with me for the right reasons. So I'd always have some kind of pre-conversation vetting. And this was usually, for me at least, it was in the form of questionnaire, where I would just ask some very basic information about their business, their project needs, and their budget range. I would always ask for that budget range just in that initial questionnaire. If the information that I got back was, I thought, you know, sort of worthy, sounds terrible, of a conversation, you know, of me taking time out of my day to speak with them, then I'd go through that. But the budget thing was always, you know, it was always a sore point. It's always the first thing everyone wants to know. It's the first thing I want to know when the builder comes around and I need to get the roof fixed. It's like, how much is it going to cost me? And the first thing the builder will say is, well, I need to take some measurements first. I can't just, you know, throw a price out there.
Right.
Because every roof is different. So I would always tend to do with the budgets is I would ask them what budget range, I would always use the words invest.
Yeah.
Because we like to think of investing in a project instead of spending. Nobody likes to spend money, but we like to invest money. So this was just on a personal level. So I would ask, you know, sort of, what are you looking to invest in this project? You know, what is it worth to you? And a lot of times that's where people would fall down. And obviously they wouldn't want to speak their mind, because if I say 10,000, then maybe he would have done it for five, you know, then I've shot myself in the foot. So a lot of times people would stay quiet. And so I would always help them. I would say, well, you know, we're talking sort of 10 to 15,000, you know, 15 to 25, you know, 50 above, what sort of thing are we looking at? And you know that if they say first thing, really that much, you know that it's right. probably not going to go anywhere.
So yeah.
Worst case scenario, if they didn't already answer this, in my case, on my questionnaire, and they bluffed their way past it, or they didn't answer it or whatever, then this is where the conversation needs to end for me. You know, if they say, well, I don't even meet your minimum, then obviously I'm very sorry. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, but this is my minimum budget. I can recommend you along to a couple of other consultants that I know, and that's it. Thank you very much. But yeah, I would always put those budget ranges, because it was just it's so much easier than somebody being able to say, well, do you know what? I've got 25K to spend. Because depending on the size of the company, it's probably actually their money as opposed to, you know, some venture capital.
Right. Especially because they're the owner.
Exactly.
I have two other ways that I sort of have tried this in the past. Both of them work in different situations. One is, sometimes if we're going along and we haven't talked about money, or maybe very early in the initial call, I will say something like, I just want to let you know that for a project like this, our starting price is $30,000. And I try and treat it like the starting price, almost like if you wanted to buy an automobile. Like, I don't know what the starting price of a Mercedes is, but it's clearly more than the starting price of a Hyundai. But everything in the automobile world has a starting price. And then we just go up from there. So the starting price is my project minimums. And if I sort of, if they say, well, we need a mobile app, well, my starting price is, you know, $125,000. And if they say they need a WordPress site, my starting price might be $10,000. But so I kind of have an idea of starting prices for different product types. And sometimes...
Can I just ask, were those minimum prices available on your website, or was that always done in person?
That was always done in person. I didn't put them out there. A lot of people, some people do, some people don't. I just never felt comfortable because, and now I can tell you where that has, let me back up. So I would say, you know, for a project like that, our starting price is $30,000. Does that fit within your budget? And that's where they have an opportunity to say, oh, I can't afford a Mercedes. I'm at the wrong car lot, right? And again, just like you, let me refer you over to a friend. He does more, you know, more cost effective, or he does budget websites, or he does something for smaller businesses, something that doesn't sound terrible, right?
Yeah.
The other question, sometimes if it's complicated and it doesn't fit into a category, what I will ask is, how much did you budget for this in 2018? And that's because pretty much every quote unquote responsible business that I work with goes through a budgetary process. And that means it's not necessarily about this project, but it's about, you know, well, our digital marketing budget is $100,000. And all I'm trying to do is sort of have a responsible business conversation where I'm not saying, how much do you want to pay me? I'm saying, how much have you budgeted to invest in your digital marketing this year? Realizing that there's a whole lot of other factors in there. And people will oftentimes just tell me that, like, oh, I budgeted $50,000 this year. And then they'll say, but it's got to go to a lot of different things. Oh, well, sure. That's fine. But if they told me they budgeted $4,000, that is a good indicator that it's not going to be the right fit for us. And we can then have a discussion about how to get them what they need, which isn't my services.
I like that. I like that one, especially that second. Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's a scary moment, I think, for most clients, both from the sense of the potential embarrassment, should we say, of them not reaching your minimum, should we say? So it's delicate in that respect. And also for the, you know, there's that whole, are they going to rip me off? Are they going to take me for everything I've got? It's a difficult subject all around, but I think as well, the more often you ask that question, the easier it becomes and the less embarrassment we tend to have about asking it, you know, and we shouldn't be, because, you know, at the end of the day, if a project doesn't fit your financial needs, then it's a non-starter, right?
Oh, absolutely. One thing that can help is, I bet the book is probably a great source of this, but if you walk into this meeting with a printed checklist, I don't know why, but I found the printed checklist. If there's a place on here on my checklist for budget range, then you can almost act, even though you wrote the checklist, you can almost act like, well, the next question I have here is about budget range. Like, the checklist is telling me I have to ask this. You know, it's not me, it's the checklist here. So how much are you budgeting to invest in 2018 for your website? I need to write a number down. It's a little silly, but it sometimes makes it appear that more than just a curiosity, more than just because it's a qualification point, it's part of a professional process where you are assessing the needs and figuring out the right value and the right approach to the project. And of course, you're trying to do all this in the client's best interest. Just like a doctor might ask a patient, do you use illegal drugs? And if so, what kind, right? The patient may not want to admit that, but I think they know the doctor has their best interest in mind. So answering honestly is going to be the right move.
Let's distill a whole interview down to one question. If there was one question that you could never, ever leave out of this list, you know, of this client interview, what would it be? For you, what's the sort of the standout question?
For me, it's, to be honest, it is about getting excited about what the client's doing. Mm-hmm. It is, and that's for me comes from the why. What's the outcome? How are we going to change your business? The other thing I find is if I know the why, and I've got a team of 1 to 25 people in the background at my company who are going to do the work, you might think that I can just take back to them any old project and they'll be equally excited about it. Turns out this is not true. The why is motivating to not only me, but it is motivating to them, the designers, the programmers, the project manager, the account manager, the QA people. The better the why, the more they're going to pour their heart and soul into the project. And then, frankly, the better the outcomes are going to be. They are going to mm-hmm. bring their A game, especially if they get a why that really matters. If we can find a why for our business that makes us feel like we're doing good in the world, we're really helping start a new business, we're protecting someone's, you know, the business from a competition that is, unforeseen, whatever it is, if there's a story that goes behind it, that's, I can go back and sort of tell that story. And I've just found that myself and my team really light up when they have a solid why.
Awesome. Yeah. It's really nice to get stoked and excited about the next project that comes in because, you know, I think we've all been through that state of, this project will be okay, to, oh, this is awesome. I can't wait to get stuck into this.
They are. And I hate to say it, but I mean, I've done business with people who, I mean, they were kind of weird or they had crazy ideas. They had a lot of money, but they had us doing things that were really stupid. And the team, I mean, no, if I told you, you'd agree, I think.
I'll take your word for it.
But the team would actually, behind the scenes, kind of be making fun of the project. And at first, I didn't think that it affected the work. For example, one project we did was we had to put sensors on toothbrushes and build an iPhone game that would reward you for brushing your teeth for 2 minutes at a time. And another one was we put sensors on toilets.
And you made fun of that? I want that for my daughter.
You know what? I wish I could make this up. This was a long time ago, but the team didn't catch the vision. And that's because the vision was stupid. And I should have just told this person, look, we don't see that you can really be successful with the sensor on the toilet or the sensor on the toothbrush. Because those were both things he had us build, were games involving these Internet of Things sensors. And the team would kind of sit back and it was almost a sport to kind of make fun of this person. And at first, I didn't think that impacted the work. But as I watched more carefully, I think that disrespect and the lack of enthusiasm does come through. So for me, now that I'm a little bit more mature and a little bit more experienced, knowing the why and making sure it's a real why we can get behind, that is important for me. How about you? What's the question that you always make sure to ask?
If I could actually only ask one question in the entire client interview, it would be, if we could only achieve one goal, if there could only be one outcome at the end of this project, what would it be? And then just leave it fall and see what they say. Because I think it just gets down to the absolute core of whatever their need or perceived need is. And it just, for me, it's just an awesome question. I don't know why I just really like that question. It gives a lot of information, I think. And it's one that I would never have gone to bat with without. You know, what matters most to you at the end of this? And you would, for me, you would just get to the core of the problem, or that would be the hope. And if it wasn't, it would at least give you a very good indicator to what the client was after. Well, look, I think, there are so many more questions. There's so many more things we could talk about in client interviews. And in fact, you know, if you do go and take a look at the client interviews book that we've got over on nushi.com and then scroll down to the bottom and you'll see it there in the footer. But we could be here all afternoon with this, but we won't be. Because
we have a book. They can go check it out. The book is free, right?
And we've got other things to get on with. I've got another meeting in 20 minutes. So come on, get out of here. But
I was just going to say thanks for listening today. So where can they find out more and where can we take questions or comments? How's this work?
I was actually going to make a request today, okay? So, you know, if there's something you'd like us to discuss, and we're pretty open, you know, we like a good chit-chat, so you know, drop us a line, podcast@thecreativepodcast.com, with any ideas, suggestions you have. We'll get back to you. probably even almost guarantee that we'll discuss whatever you get through to us. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take it easy, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.